Welcome to the 2019 Kentucky Public Radio Voter Guide. I'm Ryland Barton.
And I'm Jonice Franklin. Over the next hour, we're going to talk about the issues in this year's race for governor, as incumbent Republican Governor Matt Bevin is challenged by Democratic Attorney General Andy Beshear.
But there will be a handful of other races on the ballot, too. And later on this hour, we're going to talk to reporters who've covered this year's down-ballot candidates. That's everything from Attorney General to Secretary of State to Agriculture Commissioner.
Let's start off with one of the big, weird questions about this election. Ryland, why is Kentucky one of the few states that elect its governor during odd-numbered years?
So, yeah, Kentucky is elected governor and other statewide constitutional officers in these odd years since 1850. I actually went back through the constitutional debates recently to figure out why they did this. And back then, they did it because they were worried about confusion with the federal elections. They didn't want to have statewide elections at the same time as federal elections. So whether that's, you know, races for Congress, which take place in even-numbered years, or presidential elections, which are, of course, even-numbered years every 4 years. So this practice has persevered for more than a century now. Kentucky is one of only six states that does this. So this year, there's three. In the other odd year, say the year after a presidential election, there's another three. There's been some really weird effects with this. One is that there's just very low voter turnout during these odd years. You know, a lot more people show up to vote for congressional and especially presidential elections. And, you know, in other states that, you know, the governors and other statewide officers are on the ticket at the same time, people come out and they end up, a lot of times there's opportunity for these candidates to ride coattails.
Wouldn't that be the main argument for moving the gubernatorial election to the same year as the presidential election?
That there'd be higher voter turnout?
Yeah. Because we complain about low voter turnout all the time.
Yeah, and there have been proposals on back into history to move them back to even-numbered years for that very reason. One of the arguments is that, this provides more attention for these state elections, that they are the only things on the ballot. This is what Kentuckians are paying attention to all year. But, you know, there's a lot of speculation that keeping it in these odd years has benefited Democrats a lot in Kentucky because it separates them from the federal elections. And Kentucky has voted Republican mm-hmm. in federal elections for much longer than it's been voting Republican in state elections, which is only the last few years. You know, Mitch McConnell first elected in 1984. Last time we sent a Democratic senator to the Senate was, I believe, is 1992 with Wendell Ford's last term. And so the speculation is like, okay, well, Democrats have been able to preserve, you know, had been able to preserve their, you know, power at the local level for such a long time. And part of it was just by, you know, for a long time, being able to separate themselves from the federal ticket, where already they'd been talking about abortion for a long time. That's what, you know, something that started really in the mid-1980s with the Reagan Revolution. And now, you know, things have finally caught up in Kentucky politics, at least, you know, the last, you know, Governor Bevin being elected in 2015, only the third Republican governor since World War II. And now we have a fully Republican state house. That was in 2016. And that's actually the first time that the state has ever been controlled. You know, the legislature and the governor's mansion have all been controlled by Republicans at the same time.
And this year, Republican Governor Matt Bevin is running for re-election against Democratic Attorney General Andy Beshear. If he wins, Bevin would be the first Republican governor to ever win re-election in state history. Beshear is the son of Bevin's predecessor, former Governor Steve Beshear. And Beshear's big signature success was expanding Medicaid in Kentucky. And we're joined now by WFPL health reporter Lisa Gillespie. Lisa, Bevin has worked to scale back elements of the former governor's health initiatives. Tell us about what he's trying to do.
So when Governor Bevin was elected, he sort of ran on this platform of dismantling Medicaid expansion in Kentucky. That was sort of walked back a little bit, and he came out mostly because of pushback, and he came out with this proposal that sort of changes the Medicaid program. It puts in place community engagement, so-called community engagement requirements. Maybe you know them as work requirements that would make some people in the Medicaid program work or volunteer or do a number of other activities to keep their coverage. And it's controversial. These 12 Kentuckians have sued the federal government for approving the changes to the program. And so it's been caught up in court for a number of years. And sort of the hypothesis that Governor Bevin has is that work requirements will improve health outcomes. And sort of that's based on this idea that if people are employed, then their health is better. But there's not a lot of actual evidence to back that up. There is scientific evidence that shows that there is a positive, there's an association between unemployment and poor health outcomes, but the same isn't true for employment and positive health outcomes. And that's basically just because it hasn't really been studied. And so this would sort of be one of the first times that would be studied. Researchers from Penn State, if the waiver goes through, would be looking at the health outcomes of enrollees and sort of what they end up doing. You know, another piece of this is like, okay, sure. Like if you get people working, you know, maybe they'll start going to the doctor more. The issue is that they could also lose their health insurance, their Medicaid coverage, if they don't do the community engagement requirements. And that would definitely have a negative impact on them because they wouldn't have health insurance. And sure, just because you have health insurance doesn't mean that you go to the doctor, but definitely is a, you know, it's a good thing to have in general. And then Bashir has said that he would immediately undo the changes that Bevin is trying
to.
Yeah,
and this is like a really distinct difference between Bashir and Bevin's philosophy. Mm-hmm. You know, Bashir has come out, you know, kind of with the, I would say what Democrats have kind of rallied around the state level on up to the federal level, that healthcare is a basic human right. You know, I think that that's something that we've seen in the debates trying to repeal Obamacare in 2017. Mm-hmm. And this is something that that Bevin totally argues against. He says that we can't afford to have it be a basic human right.
Mm-hmm. You talk about healthcare being a universal right, but it's important to understand this. Somebody has to provide it. None of us have a right to force a person to go to medical school to provide medical services. We don't have a right to force somebody to treat someone if something costs money. It may be a universal desire, but to call it a right is a bit difficult when it costs money and requires a person to do something to provide that right. I think the key here is to figure out how we can ensure that people who can do for themselves do for themselves, and that we don't just seek coverage, but we get better health outcomes.
He says that this is about, it's not about saving money. He says this is about improving health outcomes. Right. And can you talk about that? You know, what's his argument that this plan would improve health outcomes?
The basic argument is that if you get employment, then, you know, you'll be a more active member of society, like your mental health will get better, you'll be going to work or volunteering, you won't be sitting at home, you'll be more engaged. But I don't, like, there's no evidence to back that up. Like, if this goes through, it's like the first time that it would be
right.
A thing.
That's like one of the weirdest things about this plan, and you know, also going on in Arkansas, it's untested,
right?
And it's something that, you know, it's also really strange because federal Medicaid law, you know, and this is what the whole lawsuit is over, you know,
right.
requires that waivers, you know, these changes that you make to the Medicaid system are supposed to, like, you know, be to the benefit of providing health coverage to people, and you know. The waiver, you know, the governor's plan explicitly says it's going to, you know, eventually remove about 90,000 people off of the healthcare rolls.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their argument, though, is like, well, you know, we're helping them transition.
Right. But they don't know that. They don't know that empirically. And the judges so far in all these court cases have ruled against the work requirements and the federal government. And that case will probably go to the Supreme Court. So.
Right.
So but if Bashir's elected, He's gonna do away with the Medicaid, with the waiver anyway.
Yeah, Bashir says that day one, that would be one thing that he would do.
Yeah,
and really, that's one of the biggest things in this race.
Yeah, it would be huge.
Moving on, another huge healthcare issue, Lisa, would be the opioid crisis.
Right,
and we've seen, you know, overdose rates go up, certainly in the Ohio Valley and Kentucky. Talk to us about where the candidates stand on fighting the opioid epidemic.
Yeah. So they're both, you know, against addiction. They're both against opioid misuse. And I guess the key sort of difference is just in where their powers lay within their respective offices. Attorney General Bashir, you know, is the state basically a lawyer. And so he's filed at least 9 lawsuits against pharmaceutical companies so far. He's pre-filed legislation or gotten legislation pre-filed that would allocate funds recovered from those lawsuits to, you know, drug prevention services, bigger treatment resources and law enforcement. Governor Bevin has created a 3-day supply for opioid prescriptions. So you can only, you know, if you go to the doctor, you can only get a 3-day initial prescription. And then also under the Medicaid program, he's expanded access to substance abuse treatment. So you can be, there used to be a limit in the number of beds that a number of people that a substance abuse treatment provider in-house could provide. That's been expanded quite a bit, and a number of other measures. So they're both, you know, against it, but the key difference is sort of like where their power lies. Although Governor Bevin, in one of the lawsuits that he's filed, he says that he got a law firm through a competitive bidding process, but that's sort of been questioned by Governor Bevin. And Rylan, can you talk about that?
Yeah, this is an ongoing controversy between the attorney general and the governor, who really don't like each other, which we haven't talked a lot about yet.
Yeah.
But one thing, so Andy Beshear has filed all these lawsuits against opioid companies. And in order to do these lawsuits, he's tried to get outside counsel, tried to hire law firms, lawyers to do a lot of these cases. This is, you know, kind of common practice when, you know, as state attorney general, like
cases.
you have so many, you know, you've got a bunch of lawyers in your office, but they're kind of already working on a bunch of things. You try to get other lawyers, and Bevin has been, you know, Beshear has to go to the Bevin administration to try and get these contracts approved, and Bevin has just not been approving them. And this has been this point of controversy, and, you know, it's the attorney general's still been moving forward the lawsuits and stuff, but he wants the added firepower.
You'd think that this might be one of those issues where they would agree.
You'd think
that this would be something that would kind of go above and beyond politics.
But as you said, they really don't like each other.
There's nothing sacred.
They really don't like each other, and they're very different.
Which is a shame. It's a real, I mean, because, you know, people have died.
Yeah.
We need money for treatment.
And I think that, so on that line, so one thing's the drug overdose rate increased year after year for, I think it was like probably the last 4 or 5 years, except for last year. It went down finally.
Right.
Why did that happen?
So opioids have been kind of taking a backseat to other drugs, and which is interesting. And then also...
Like meth.
Right. Yeah. Like exactly. Like, yeah. Meth and some other drugs are making a comeback. But then there's also, I mean, there's been a ton of money that has been poured into opioid stuff. I mean, through grants from the federal government, and, you know, people say that maybe that's making a difference, and that's why.
Yeah. That's always a question. Like, does the policy affect it?
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it's harder to get opioids now, although arguably that just sort of pushes people onto the street to buy heroin or, you know, illicit prescription drugs. So, but I mean, there has been a decrease in opioid deaths. So, which would maybe indicate that either people, are moving on to other drugs, which is always a thing, right? Like if it's not one thing, it's another. That's just through time. But that also that there's all this money that's going to treatment.
So finally, in healthcare, I guess, because we'll have to move on to some other topics, but abortion is obviously a huge issue in this race, because Governor Bevin's made sure that it's a huge issue in this race. He calls himself the most pro-life governor in the country. But tell us about where these two men stand on abortion and abortion access.
Yeah, he's helped get through several pieces of legislation in the past, you know, like 3 years since he's been in office. Those include things from... like limiting.
I mean, most recently, there's the ban on abortion once the fetal heartbeat can be detected. So that's the 6 week in pregnancy, much earlier
that's
than many women realize.
Tied up in court.
So that one's been blocked. There's a ban after the 20th week in pregnancy, which is never challenged. There's the ultrasound abortion requirement, requiring doctors to broadcast of the fetal heartbeat to a woman who's seeking an abortion before she can have the procedure done. There is a ban on the dilation and evacuation procedure. It's a common first trimester abortion procedure. That one's also been blocked by federal courts.
Yeah.
There's just kind of this grab bag of policies that have either been blocked or you know, and some that haven't been challenged. A couple of which, and one that ultrasound abortion law has actually been upheld by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals.
And there's one abortion clinic left in the state. I think when Bevin started, there were at least two.
Yeah, there was
three.
There was two. There was the EMW had a facility in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
They shut down amid a licensure battle. Planned Parenthood had opened up a facility in Louisville briefly,
right.
And then they have stopped providing abortions amid a licensure mm-hmm. battle. And, of course, EMW in Louisville, which is the last remaining abortion provider in Kentucky, and the governor has been in this prolonged licensure battle in trying to close them down over the requirements that they have,
right.
Agreements with hospital service, or emergency services, and ambulances,
yeah.
And said they didn't have proper ones. This was just a couple weeks ago, he held a press conference at the governor's mansion. He said he would be fine if there were no abortion providers in the state. He thinks mm-hmm. that they don't provide any public service.
Right. Which means, you know, women are making longer drives and, you know, it's just a bit harder to get access.
And Bashir has, you know, he says that he's in favor of Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is really, he's really kind of nailed down his position finally at this point in the campaign. That's his line. It's Roe v. Wade.
Right.
So that, which is something that protects, it forbids states from, from restricting abortion before the point of fetal viability,
mm-hmm.
which is considered to be about the 24th to 26th week in pregnancy. And he says that there should be restrictions on abortions later than that.
Yeah. When he came in for the primary interviews that we had, I tried to get him to nail down, are you in favor? Do you believe in a woman's right to choose or whatever? And he just kept going back to the Roe v. Wade thing, mm-hmm. the law of the land, he kept saying.
Yeah. And now he calls Bevin's views extremist.
Right.
And he's come out attacking the governor for signing off on policies that don't have exceptions for cases of rape or incest.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been a bit of a transition in terms of his messaging throughout this campaign.
Bashir's running mate, Jacqueline Coleman, though, didn't she once refer to herself as a pro-life Democrat?
She did.
Have they addressed that?
She addressed that in the primary campaign. So she described herself as a pro-life Democrat during a debate in 2014 when she was running for state house. But this spring, she came out saying that she supports the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision. She said that she believes the government doesn't have any business in a doctor's office. She says those decisions should be between a woman and her doctor.
Do you think, were you surprised, Ryland, that Bevin was making abortion such a huge part of his reelection campaign?
No. I mean, this is a big issue, not only in Kentucky and across the country. It's so incredibly timely right now, especially as legislatures are trying to basically pass these laws that will, be challenged and ultimately appealed to the Supreme Court. And as proponents have said, they hope that that challenge will ultimately force the court to overturn Roe v. Wade, to make a decision that that overturns Roe v. Wade.
He's even said, I want some of this. He said, this legislation, I want this to end up in the Supreme Court.
Yeah. And polling shows that Kentuckians support these kinds of laws, or at least they support a lot of limits on abortion. And Kentucky is a historically very conservative state, especially on these kinds of issues. All right, we're coming up to a break. In the next segment, we're going to talk about education with WFPL's education reporter Liz Schlemmer. And we'll also hear from energy and environment reporter Ryan Van Velzer about how the candidates talk about climate change and coal. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Kentucky Public Radio Voter Guide. I'm Joni Franklin.
And I'm Ryland Barton. We're talking about the big issues in Kentucky's race for governor this year. Incumbent Republican Governor Matt Bevin is running against Democratic Attorney General Andy Bashir. And during this segment, we're going to talk about education with WFPL's education reporter, Liz Schlemmer. Hi, Liz.
Hi, Ryland. Thanks for having me.
And let's just start off. Teachers have descended on Frankfurt by the thousands to protest education policies put forward by the Bevin administration over the last 3.5 years. Can you just start off by talking about what teachers were so angry about?
Well, teachers were angry about many things and different things on different years. So if we're looking back to 2 years ago, the previous legislative session, teachers were very concerned about their pensions. And as we saw in the final hours of the session, the infamous sewer bill was passed. This 11-page sewer bill was gutted and put with a pension bill that would change the defined benefits for future teachers.
Yeah, this is a really remarkable moment. I was there. Leaders of the legislature had repeatedly said that, like, the pension bill was dead. It was not coming back during this legislative session. And then all of a sudden, like, we hear this special committee is happening. And we all just have to rush to this room, and it's not in one of the normal committee rooms, and they're all gathered there, and there it is, this giant, I think it was 293-page pension bill, and they're going to pass it right then, and they're going to vote on it later that afternoon out of the full house. You know, there weren't a lot of teachers there protesting or anything yet, but there certainly were in the coming days after that.
Well, and in the coming session, too. I mean, right. It really had repercussions for teacher activism in the following session, where many teachers were saying, we feel like we have to be here. We just don't trust our lawmakers anymore, and we don't trust that what they say they're working on is what they're working on. And they just came in the thousands. And over several days, this legislative session, and they were concerned about many things. It wasn't just about pensions. It was much more nuanced issues, things like representation on the board that governs teachers' pensions, as well as issues of privatizing public education. You know, they're concerned about what's going to happen with charter schools. That wasn't a bill that was up this session, but just generally privatization. But a bill that was up was scholarship tax credits. So this is a tax incentive for people to donate to scholarship funds that help students attend private schools. And so it's a way for the state to, rather than spend money on private schools, agree to take in less money that will then be going towards private school students. This was a big point of contention, and this bill did not pass, but it may be up again next year.
Going back to that pension bill, so, and, you know, this has a lot to do with this race. Attorney General Andy Beshear had sued to try and block that pension bill. It was ultimately the Supreme Court unanimously ruled against that bill, and not necessarily the contents of it, though. They were ruling against the process in which the legislature passed it. Again, that, like, you know, kind of a furtive committee hearing that they had, and then rushing it out of the legislature in a matter of days.
Well, and not having readings on that specific bill with its language.
Yeah. Something I'm curious about politically is, you know, so Andy Beshear eventually becomes the opponent for, you know, against Governor Matt Bevin in this race. Is this, do teachers, do they look fondly upon him because of what he did to, you know, sue over that bill and ultimately try and block it when you're talking to teachers?
I've certainly heard really nice things from teachers about how they trust Beshear based on battles that he's taken up for teachers, or, you know, generally battles that he's taken up against Bevin if they are already Beshear supporters. You know, and it's something that Beshear talks about a lot, is that he's gone to bat for teachers. And I can say certainly from when I was spending time at the legislature in this past session, that when Beshear came down the stairs to talk to teachers that were gathered, they were chanting for him.
Do you think that the opposition to Bevin, you know, how deep does that go? You know, so I think that the governor really argues that this is just a very active, vocal group of teachers who have who opposes policies, and namely a lot of people, you know, teachers who are associated with the statewide teachers union, Kentucky Education Association, that has opposed so many of these policies. But, you know, have his policies actually changed anybody's mind about him?
I think you're right that there is just this very vocal base, but there are also people who have changed their mind about Bevin. One teacher in particular, Catherine Van Gilder, is a teacher at Doss High in Louisville. She said that she had voted for Bevin in the past, and she would not be voting for him again. Here she is.
I think most teachers feel disenfranchised when you have a governor who's calling you thugs, making you responsibility for things that are happening in children's homes that have nothing to do with us. He's accused us of being the reason that a child might got molested or started drugs or was, you know, killed or whatever.
Van Gilder is referencing several times that Bevin has made comments about teachers, especially teachers who were protesting, who were causing their school districts to close, blaming them for things like students being potentially molested, or in Louisville, one student was shot by a family member on a day that schools were closed, and he has put the blame on teachers. Teachers have not taken that lightly.
This is kind of the central point of, you know, of Bashir's campaign, is that he's saying that both the policies are unpopular and the way in which the governor's going about it is unpopular. You know, so, but I think that really the most part, though, is that he's attacking the governor over the way he talks about teachers. That comment about, protesting teachers led to children getting sexually abused because they were left alone while teachers protested in Frankfurt. There is the one where he said that he compared teachers to drowning victims, that you have to knock them over the head and drag them to shore because they don't know what's best for them.
I can say also teachers have expressed that they're concerned that this political climate and the kind of language that Bevin uses may be affecting the teacher pipeline. As well as what's happening with pensions and whether or not there's going to be a defined benefit for teachers from the point that they retire until they die. There's, you know, the teacher pipeline is waning in Kentucky, both in terms of enrollment in colleges of education, in terms of retention. School districts are dealing with teacher shortages. I mean, some of those are especially bad in particular parts of the state or in particular subjects, but generally the teacher shortage is a real thing. And there are concerns about, you know, the way that we talk about teachers, how is that going to affect a young person who's considering going into this field?
Mm-hmm. So another thing that I heard from teachers, you know, who are protesting in Frankfurt, you know, again, there's this whole grab bag of issues, but one of them is just overall education funding. So we can talk about it with K-12 funding. The governor likes to tout that the state has its highest level of contributing to SEEK. That's the school funding formula. Critics of that would say that it's the highest level, but that doesn't account for inflation. And then on a higher education level, I mean, state government's funding for higher education has just fallen off precipitously, you know, for a long time. This is something that dates back to the recession. This is something that happened under former Governor Steve Beshear and has continued into Bevin's administration as the economy has improved. You've done some reporting on that higher education funding issue over this last week. What were you finding and talking about?
Well, there has been a decline both in real dollar amounts as well as inflation-adjusted dollar amounts for higher education. And what that does to our public colleges and universities is they both have to tighten their belt as well as pass on some of that cost to students in the form of tuition. Kentucky has been a little bit more restrained in tuition increases compared to other universities across the country. But in terms of the level of cuts and the persistence of those cuts, these are among the deepest cuts in the country, you know, in like the top or bottom, depending which way you want to look at it, 15 states in terms of the level of cuts that are being made to higher education, and especially in the persistence. You know, a lot of states had to tighten their belts after the recession. A lot of states made cuts to higher education. But what's happening in other parts of the country is that they're rebounding and they're starting to put more and more money back that was taken out after the recession. And Kentucky, rather, has actually had a cut in the most recent budget for higher education. That part is against trend. The persistence of these cuts to higher education is what makes Kentucky a little bit different than other states that are experiencing the same pressures.
And Governor Bevin has, he has said that this is just kind of the reality of managing the state's money. He says that we just don't have enough money to restore any of those cuts, especially when the state has this big pension crisis. We have this big, whole lot of money that we got to throw towards the pension systems. Here's Governor Bevin. He was debating Andy Beshear in Paducah at the Paducah Chamber of Commerce debate.
Would I love to see more money for higher education? Of course I would. Will I make it a priority to the extent we have the money? Of course.
Thank you,
but
Governor.
The reality is we have to spend money that we have, and we can't promise money that
Thank
we
you.
Don't have.
I mean, that really kind of boils down Bevin's arguments about funding in a nutshell,
yeah.
right?
Is yeah.
that
whether it's
there
higher
just
education
simply
or,
isn't money.
Yeah. Right. And this gets, you know, to this whole larger conversation about, the state's tax policy and how we structure things and what we give tax breaks for. This has been a huge part of Andy Beshear's campaign is like, all right, we're going to legalize casino gambling and tax it. And that's supposedly going to bring in $500 million a year in revenue. And the governor says, well, first of all, that's just not popular enough in the legislature to do that. And he just says that the only way that he believes in growing the state's economy is by, creating pro-business policies that eventually attract more businesses and attract more workers and future citizens of Kentucky.
Well, and critics are also saying that they're concerned about some of those tax cuts, the tax credits to businesses that are part of that strategy to grow business are actually reducing the revenue that's available today in order to attract that growth.
So on the other side of this, so we've been talking about higher education. Let's talk about, K-12 funding. This is something that teachers have been critical of Bevin. What's the lay of the land on K-12 funding right now?
Well, the state's contribution to K-12 funding has remained more or less flat overall. The base amount that goes in to seek the base, it's called a guarantee per student. It's about $4,000 per student. That has remained pretty steady. But in doing that, it's not keeping up with the rise of inflation. And in general, the state's contribution is not keeping up with inflation. Meanwhile, local school boards and local taxpayers are making up that difference between inflation and growing needs and what's available from the state. So that burden is really just starting to shift a little bit from state coffers to local taxpayers over time.
All right. We've been talking with WFPL's education reporter, Liz Schlemmer, about education issues in this year's race for governor. Thanks, Liz.
Thank you.
Another issue that is always at the forefront of Kentucky politics is coal. Eastern Kentucky's economy was historically dependent on coal, even though the number of people working in the state's coal industry has declined. It still remains a huge political issue in the state. We're joined now by WFPL Energy and Environment reporter Ryan Van Velzer. Ryan, you've covered this issue closely. Can you just start off by giving us a bit of background on the current state of the coal industry in Kentucky?
Yeah, let's step back for a moment and we'll talk nationally where the trends are at. Last year, coal consumption fell to its lowest level since 1979. And recently, you had Murray Energy filing for bankruptcy, making it the ninth coal producer to file for bankruptcy under the Trump administration. There were some statistics from the Kentucky Coal Association that I saw earlier this year. In the fourth quarter of last year, mining jobs were about 6,500 in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. That number has almost certainly dropped since then with the bankruptcies that we've seen this year. It's a problem for Eastern Kentucky. It's a problem for Western Kentucky, too. But it's Eastern Kentucky was even more heavily dependent upon coal traditionally. So it's not coming back anytime soon. You have and it's not because of renewables that coal is going away so fast. That plays some role in it, but it's actually much more due to natural gas. Natural gas right now is just having a renaissance in America. It is cheaper than coal, and it's very abundant, and that's only going to increase in the coming years, and it's just simply outcompeting coal.
How have Bevin and Beshear talked about helping Eastern Kentucky transition away from the coal economy as it becomes less financially and environmentally viable?
Honestly, they're very similar. They both have very similar ideas. I mean, maybe it's different flavors, but they both have pretty similar ideas. Just take a look at this. Just last week, Beshear's campaign spokesman was emailing the Center for Public Integrity on a story, and he said that all energy sources are needed to address the planet's warming. I've also spoken with Beshear about this earlier this year during the primaries. What I take away from it is that they want to encourage the growth of whatever energy sources they can in those regions. If that's coal, if that's solar, if that's wind, I think they're open to all of those things. And actually, Bevin is in a very similar place. In fact, let's hear what Bevin had to say at the keynote address of the Southern States Energy Board meeting just last month.
My point here is that where we are today, the current technology, the current landscape, the current demand, the current reality, is that renewables cannot come close to meeting the demand as it increases around the world. We need fossil fuels going forward. We need a diverse and a secure energy infrastructure.
So you see there that actually Bevin is not anti-renewables. He's for whatever works. And I think he would like to encourage renewables in Kentucky as well, because that provides jobs. But certainly he's more in the camp for encouraging the growth of coal than Andy Beshear is. However, coal's not coming back. And there's an underlying difference here that is the key difference between the candidates in this respect, and that's climate change. Andy Beshear believes that climate change is real, and Matt Bevin doesn't believe climate change is real.
What does Matt Bevin say about climate change?
Matt Bevin has said a number of different things. Recently, you know, he was deriding Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old activist who spoke in front of the UN. He said that her ideas were not based in fact. But they are based in fact. Everything that Greta Thunberg has talked about has come from the IPCC report from 2018. That's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That's the leading climate scientists of the world getting together to craft a document to explain to the world where we are at with climate change and the vast changes that need to be made as soon as possible to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. So from that perspective, you can see that there is a fundamental difference there between underlying difference between Matt Bevin and Andy Beshear, because how they guide the ship, the strategy that they employ for the future of the state will be dramatically different based on whether or not you actually fundamentally believe in climate change. Right now, in Bevin's administration, I would say that there are staff in his different agencies that believe in climate change, that are acting and employing policies to adapt and prevent the worst impacts of climate change. But that's not a top-down policy. That's a bottom-up policy. That's what these people are doing because they know it's right, and they know that they have to do this for the betterment of the state. But that's not what the direction of the governor is telling them to do.
You said that Andy Beshear says that he believes climate change is real. Has he gone as far as talking about solutions or what he believes we need to be doing?
You know, he's talked about increasing renewables in Kentucky, particularly solar. He's a big supporter of solar in Kentucky, of net metering in its older forms. And I think he wants to encourage that in the state. But again, that's not that much different than Bevin. I think Bevin also wants to encourage those things. However, I think Beshear probably would take more action in that respect.
All right, that's WFPL Energy and Environment reporter Ryan Van Velzer talking about where Kentucky's candidates for governor stand on climate change and coal. After a short break, we're going to shift to the down ballot. There are five other offices up for election this year besides governor, and we'll hear from reporters who've been following those races. That's coming up next on the Kentucky Public Radio Voter Guide. Welcome back to the Kentucky Public Radio Voter Guide for 2019. I'm Ryland Barton.
And I'm Jonice Franklin. We've been talking about this year's race for governor, and now we're going to shift gears to the down ballot. Ryland, you've covered this year's race for attorney general. Of course, Democrat Andy Beshear is the current attorney general, but he's running for governor, so he's left the seat open. Tell us about who's running.
So we've got Democrat Greg Stumbo. He used to be the Speaker of the Kentucky House of Representatives until he lost re-election in 2016. He also served one term as Attorney General between 2004 until 2008. The Republican candidate is Daniel Cameron. He's a protege of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. He worked as McConnell's general counsel when the Senate confirmed President Trump's Supreme Court pick Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Since then, he's been a corporate lawyer for Frost Brown Todd in Kentucky.
What's this race been like? What are they trying to draw differences over?
This has definitely been the most acrimonious of the down ballot races. I'd say the biggest issue is abortion. Daniel Cameron says that, and that's the Republican candidate, he says the current Democratic Attorney General, Andy Beshear, has done a bad job in his office by not defending some anti-abortion laws that have passed out of the legislature. Beshear did not defend those laws because he said he questioned whether they were constitutional. A lot of these laws have deliberately been trying to undercut the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision that prevents states from limiting abortion before the point of fetal viability. We were talking a little bit about that earlier. And so he says that Greg Stumbo would just do the same thing. He says that it's important to have a Republican attorney general in place. But Stumbo, for his part, he says, well, you know, yeah, we're not going to waste money defending unconstitutional laws.
So if Daniel Cameron wins this race, he would make history as the first African-American elected to a statewide office on their own ticket, right?
Right, on their own ticket. So Jeanine Hampton, our current lieutenant governor, she was first technically the first African-American elected to statewide office, but she was on a slate with Governor Bevin. So he would be the first one independently elected. Meanwhile, Greg Stumbo, I think that his overarching argument against Cameron has really just been his relative youth. He's 33 years old. Stumbo is 67. There was a lawsuit that came out, which Greg Stumbo says he was not behind, that challenged Cameron's eligibility, saying that he did not have enough experience as a lawyer to become attorney general. A judge ended up ruling against that lawsuit, saying that Cameron is eligible. And Stumbo just says, you know, all right, well, even beyond that, I'm somebody who's already been in this office before. And, you know, he has a 35-plus year tenure in state government. And he just says he's the right guy for the job.
You mentioned that Greg Stumbo was previously the attorney general for Kentucky, and he played a big part in the last Republican governor, Ernie Fletcher's political downfall.
Stumbo conducted an investigation into Fletcher's hiring practices, and there were indictments for Fletcher and many of his aides. He ended up pardoning members of his administrations, and charges against him were dropped as part of an agreement with prosecutors. But still, he was really politically hurt by this, and Kentuckians didn't trust him anymore. And that's ultimately how Democratic Governor Steve Beshear ended up coming into office in 2008.
All right, Ryland, thanks. And now to the Secretary of State's race. WFPL's Amina Alahi talked to the candidates running to be Kentucky's next top election official. Amina, real quick, who are they? What are the big issues Kentuckians should be looking at in this race?
The candidates are Michael Adams, he's a Republican candidate, he's an election lawyer, and Heather French Henry, the Democrat, who was formerly the head of the Department of Veterans Affairs in Kentucky. The big issues in this race are mostly around voting issues and concerns, because the Secretary of State is Kentucky's chief elections official. So people are concerned about things like access to voting, expanding voting rights, election security, and all sorts of other issues.
So where do the candidates stand on election security? What do they have to say about it?
Michael Adams thinks that it's more of an issue domestically, in the sense that people who run elections or oversee them might be acting in ways that are inappropriate.
When I served on the State Board of Elections, we found that a lot of our clerks don't use protected Wi-Fi. That's a big vulnerability. Pranksters can play around. Candidates can play around, get into the voter file potentially.
Then Ms. Henry, she has a different perspective, which is that cybersecurity is the real, you know, major threat. And that's something that we hear on the national level as well, in terms of voting machines being hacked or, you know, online campaigns to influence elections. And so she has some ideas for, you know, potentially protecting Kentucky's elections better against that.
I would like to see a sole designated person, a chief information election officer, that does nothing but oversee and implement new infrastructure to make sure our elections are secure.
But something that both of them agree is that Kentucky's election infrastructure, so the machines and their ability to maintain paper trails and things like that, is inadequate and needs to be shored up. And they are each hoping that the U.S. Congress would provide more funding to help Kentucky do those things.
Current Secretary of State Allison Lindergan Grimes, of course, term limited, but also quite embroiled in some controversy recently and previously, I guess. Did they talk about her at all? Specifically, you know, maybe French Henry, you know, being a member of the Democratic Party. I'm just curious if she had anything to say about it.
I asked both of them about this, and Michael Adams was quick to criticize her and her father, Jerry Lundergan, for their actions, And it was more difficult to get a similar sense from Heather French Henry. She didn't initially want to criticize Secretary Grimes, but after being asked again, she essentially said that she thought she acted in the best interest, what she thought was the best interest of the voters.
Okay, Amina, thank you. That's city reporter Amina Lahi talking about the Kentucky Secretary of State race. You can see her full rundown of this race at our voter guide online at WFPL.org.
And now we're going to talk about Kentucky's race for agriculture commissioner. Incumbent Republican Ryan Quarles is running for re-election. He's running against Democrat Robert Haley Conway. Liam Niemeyer at the Ohio Valley Resource and WKMS in Murray covered this race. Liam, tell us a little bit about what exactly the agriculture commissioner does.
It's sort of like a promoter, marketer for agriculture in the state, almost kind of like a cheerleader of sorts. They help bring awareness to various programs, advocate for farmers on a national and international level in terms of what's available and what's happening in Kentucky in terms of agriculture. And then they also facilitate things of various different crops that are grown in the state.
Can you talk to us a little bit about hemp? How is this playing into this race? I know that Commissioner Quarles is really proud of his record on this. What does he want to do with hemp in the future? What does Robert Haley Conway want to do with hemp?
Yeah, Ryan Quarles, he, in terms of Quarles' re-election bid, he's really pointing to the expansion of this hemp program as one of the reasons why he should be re-elected. Right now, this fall, over 26,000 acres have been planted of hemp, and over 1,000 farmers are growing it throughout the state. The amount that's been planted of hemp in Kentucky, that number has nearly quadrupled from last year. But Quarles is pointing to the fact of that expansion as a reason for why he should be reelected. Robert Conway, he's very supportive of the hemp industry also, but he says that the fact how the Department of Agriculture, as of right now, they issue licenses for who gets to grow hemp and how much, he thinks that system is a little bit unfair, and he wants to implement a system that harkens back to a tobacco-style system, to where the amount of hemp that you can grow is proportionate to the size of your farm. He says that he wants to allow, I guess, more opportunity for all farmers in Kentucky to take part in growing hemp in Kentucky. Conway thinks that this system is a better way of going about that. So both candidates are very supportive of the hemp industry in general. They both want to see it expand, but they have different sort of methods of how to go about that.
And of course, President Trump's trade policies have also come up in this race. Can you talk to us a little bit about how Commissioner Quarles and how Mr. Conway think about those tariffs? Do they think that it's good policy going forward?
A common refrain that you'll hear from many farmers in Kentucky is that they want trade, not aid. And that's something that Quarles did bring up in our interview with him that we had in creating this election guide. While he believes that the trade negotiations, he realizes that they're taking a little bit of time. He stands with the Trump administration in terms of wanting to get a fair trade deal. And Conway, as a contrast, he's not in favor at all of the Trump administration using retaliatory tariffs in terms of getting a trade deal with, like, let's say, China. He thinks that spending billions of dollars for keeping farmers afloat, while it's necessary, he doesn't believe that it's going to get a better trade deal than what we may already have had beforehand with China. He just thinks it's unnecessary for the most part.
All right. Liam Niemeyer from the Ohio Valley Resource and WKMS. Thanks a lot for talking about the agriculture commissioner race with us.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan.
Another one of the five constitutional officers besides governor or lieutenant governor that'll be on the ballot this year is state auditor. The auditor's in charge of monitoring the state's financial record keeping. They also have the power to conduct these special investigations. WFPL's energy and environment reporter Ryan Van Velzer talked to the auditor candidates this year. Ryan, tell us about who's running.
Yeah, I think the most important thing to know about the auditor is that even though this is a partisan election, this is really an independent office. designed to serve as an independent check on state government, regardless of who's in office.
Yeah.
So that said, right now, who's in office is Republican incumbent Mike Harmon. Now, he was in the legislature for about 13 years, and Harmon's Democratic challenger is Sherry Donahue. And now she's got a degree in industrial engineering from Purdue University. And then you have independent libertarian candidate Kyle Hugenberg, who's a certified internal auditor. He spent his entire career auditing, and he is the anti-establishment candidate.
And he talked to the candidates a little bit about why they think Kentuckians should vote for them.
Because I am experienced, I'm accomplished, and I will fulfill this role faithfully and protect the citizens.
I'm running for auditor because I'm a libertarian and because I'm the only person running in this race who's actually going to be truly skeptical of the nature and use of resources in government when conducting audits.
I believe we've done a great job, and I think we would like to continue that great job.
That was Democratic candidate Sherry Donahue, Libertarian candidate Kyle Hugenberg, and Republican incumbent auditor Mike Harmon, all giving their brief pitches for why voters should vote for them. When you were talking to these candidates, what stuck out to you as kind of the big difference between these candidates?
I would say, you know, they were really arguing over about how they would tackle the job of auditor. Mike Harmon says, he will, if you like what he's done, he will do more of the same. And he does have some big audits under his belt. If you are interested in something different, Sherry Donahue has said that she wants to do some different audits, including into the state's cyber and election security.
Right. She brought up a couple different things that she thought that the auditor should be looking more into in state government, notably also something that's generated a lot of headlines lately, the governor's use of the state plane. But going back to Republican incumbent Mike Harmon, so he's got, you know, a few big audits under his belt. There was, you know, so one into that statewide broadband project, Kentucky Wired. Tell us what he found a little bit about that.
Right. Okay. So he started looking at Kentucky Wired, which is going, you know, this campaign that was started under the Steve Beshear administration. He found that in a review that the project was nearly $100 million over budget and raised questions about its inception under Beshear's administration. He's also, he completed the audit into the University of Louisville Foundation, mm-hmm. and he has done some oversight of the pension systems, though Donahue has been critical of those and said that he should do more.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Libertarian candidate Hugenberg says that the auditor should not be a partisan, that it shouldn't be a Republican or a Democrat, especially when you have a member of the same party auditing, say, you know, a state government that is run by members of the same party.
That's a big part of his whole platform. He says, if you believe that Republicans and Democrats are in these offices just giving back to their own respective parties, and you want somebody who's going to be a separate check, a totally independent check from those two parties, then he is the candidate for you. And he is a certified auditor. He has spent his entire career doing auditing, so he feels that he is the right choice for auditor for those reasons.
All right, we've been talking to WFPL reporter Ryan Van Velzer, who talked to this year's candidates for state auditor. Thanks, Ryan. Next, we're going to talk about Kentucky's race for state treasurer. The treasurer is in charge of making sure state spending is legal and constitutional, although in the past there have been candidates who have run for state treasurer who have just run on the concept of abolishing the office. Anyway, we have WFPL health reporter Lisa Gillespie, who talked to this year's candidates for treasurer. Can you tell us a little bit about who the candidates are?
Sure. So Allison Ball is the current treasurer in Kentucky. She's been there, you know, for 4 years. She is an attorney, and she has a law degree from the University of Kentucky. And her law practice was in bankruptcy and commercial litigation. Her challenger is Michael Bowman, who is running on the Democratic ticket, and he's currently a branch manager at a bank in Louisville. He graduated from U of L, has a fine arts degree, and was the chief legislative assistant to Louisville's Metro Council woman Cindy Fowler in the past.
And Ball is, of course, the Republican candidate.
Yes.
Bowman is the Democratic candidate.
Right.
Can you talk about what is Ball running on? What is her what does she feel like her accomplishments are in her first 4 years in office?
Yeah, so she talked a lot about transparency. She launched a transparency website that sort of tracks where money is spent in the government. And she said that that could have been $1 million project, but Ohio already had sort of a blueprint for it, already had done sort of similar thing. And so she kind of used that, and it wasn't quite as expensive.
And how about Bowman? Why does he think that, Alison Ball hasn't been doing a good enough job, and why does he think he's the better candidate for the job?
Yeah, so he talked a bit about how he wants to hold the governor more in check, that sort of indirectly said that basically Ball should have done a better job as a watchdog. He also talked a lot about legalizing medical marijuana and gambling, and said that, you know, we have this pension crisis, we need to do this. I pressed him, you know, the treasurer's office, like he's not like a legislator.
Right.
So he can't like do that himself. And I pressed him on that a couple of times, and he was like, well, you know, as an elected official, like I can go to, you know, different, you know, offices and talk to people about this.
I think that's such an interesting thing with these constitutional officers. Yeah. A big part of any of their jobs is kind of that marketing aspect almost, where they're just advocating for a particular law. None of them get votes in the legislature, whether to make that pass or not.
Right.
But they just hope their, you know, face can lend a hand to the cause.
Yeah. And I suppose if Governor Bevin is reelected, having Bowman in office, having that advocacy probably wouldn't do too much. But Bashir is elected, I guess, you know, that'd probably have a bit more sway. Although, there's Republican-held legislature.
And no matter what, there's going to be a Republican-led legislature next year. Yeah. All right, we've been talking to WFPL reporter Lisa Gillespie about this year's candidates for treasurer. Thanks so much, Lisa.
Yeah, thank you.
That's it for the Kentucky Public Radio Voter Guide. Thanks for tuning in. Remember, polls are open tomorrow from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m. local time.
Be sure to tune into our live special coverage of the election results tomorrow night. That starts at 7 o'clock Eastern.
And if you want to read more about the races, you can head over to our online voter guide at WFPL.org.
Thanks to all the reporters who covered these important races. I'm Ryland Barton.
And I'm Jonice Franklin. Don't forget,
go vote.